on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, July 17th, 2025 edition of Invest Talk. Summer is racing by. It's still warm here in Southern California, but the markets are a bit quiet, at least so far in earnings season, not a whole lot of movements, but we are also in OPEX week. So certainly we could see fireworks next week. Typically OPEX is a turning point in markets, at least in the short term, but that's neither here nor there. You know, this is really, the show isn't just about the next week or the next month, which certainly I have opinions and insights on, but it's more about your mindset and data and perspective that can help you become a better investor, help you make better decisions with your money, both within the investment world as well as the personal finance world. And the way that we help you mainly is by answering your finance and investment questions. So I encourage you to call right now at 888-99-CHART with anything money related that is on your mind. No question is too complex or too simple. We are here for all of it. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics for the hour. But as usual, we'll tackle this caller question first.
Hey, InvestTalk. Bill from Philadelphia here. Calling regarding Global Payments Incorporated, ticker symbol GPN, has about a $20 billion market cap. Wanted to see if this was a good time to get into the stock. I could see that as a good value play, and wanted to get your thoughts. Thank you.
Looking at Global Payments, GPN is the symbol, and it looks cheap. If you look at based on earnings this year, it's supposed to be $12.12 from $11.42 last year. That's about a 6% bump. And then $13.62 expected next year. And both of those estimates are trending higher from analysts. So that's a good thing. And it's an $83 stock. So it looks very cheap. Mid to high single digit multiple. But then you head over to some of the other metrics, and they do look cheap, but also the business is not as fantastic as those numbers make it seem. Return equity is only 6.75%, not that high. Return assets only 3% there, so don't love that. And cash flow is very robust, so I like that. Certainly room to raise the dividend, so I like that. It is taking that cash flow and buying back shares. I like that as well. So I like a lot of what I see here outside of those profitability metrics. But my biggest worry is just that momentum. It's down and continues to trend lower. Now, what does Global Payments do? Well, they are a leading provider of payment processing and software solutions for small and mid-sized businesses. In 30 countries, about a quarter of its revenue comes from North America and some in Europe and Asia as well. So the good thing is they have good geographic diversity. The problem is, I think they have some secular headwinds, okay? Which means that, you know, as more and more people maybe go into cryptocurrencies, you go into stable coins, etc., the potential for their demand for their networks will go down. And this caters to small and medium-sized businesses, and they're struggling more than the average. So I think that's part of it here. Now, the good thing is, let's look at their balance sheet. Oh, that's the issue. Yeah, they have a lot of debt. Okay. So about $14 billion in net debt, $15 billion in net debt, call it. Which on a $20 billion market cap, that's not nothing. That's not nothing. So a lot of that cash flow is really going to go towards deleveraging the balance sheet, or at least should go towards deleveraging the balance sheet. So that's your issue here, is I would like a cleaner balance sheet. Obviously, with prices or interest rates going up, the cost of carrying that debt is going to rise as well. And you know, while the technicals are improving, it's still in a very, very strong downtrend. So until this can get back above, let's see, above that 200-day moving average, which right now is up around $96, and currently the stock is trading around 83, I probably wouldn't touch it. It just remains too weak technically, and I don't like companies right now that have big debt and have secular headwinds. Let's go take a live call. Thomas from Santa Cruz looking at Berkshire Hathaway. Thomas?
Justin, can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Hey, Justin. Yeah, I'm calling about Berkshire Hathaway. Basically, I would like to hear you guys' 2 cents on the amount of cash that Warren Buffett's holding on right now, and also basically thinking about how the stock could rebound if there were any type of pullbacks in market, knowing that he has so much cash or they have so much cash. And then I would like for you to compare it to like the S&P 500 with its current evaluations. I know the S&P is at all-time highs and Berkshire has pulled back a little bit. So how do you like the price of Berkshire right now? And then also, what do you think about the cash situation, and would that benefit them in a potential rebound?
Well, it would definitely benefit them. You know, when prices in equities go down more broadly, a company like Berkshire historically has stepped in and bought shares at lower prices, and over the long term, that's benefited them. Now, right now, they have an elevated level of cash, so clearly they don't see a lot of opportunity out there. Now, from a timing perspective, it's a terrible timing mechanism. So don't think because Berkshire has elevated cash levels that the market has to roll over tomorrow or anything like that. It's just a product of the valuations at the current time. And as we've seen for the last 15 plus years, is that valuations can stay elevated for longer than you probably expect. And so it's not a timing mechanism, but it does speak to, hey, there are a lot of pockets of the market that are overvalued and very few that are undervalued. And I think that's generally true. Now, it has been in a downtrend as of late. Now, could that be coinciding with the fact that Warren is stepping down and the market may be less happy about or less confident in the new leadership's ability to allocate capital effectively? I think that's absolutely true. But the compounding problem is that analyst expectations for earnings this year and next year continue to be revised lower. And it's not shocking considering the type of business that Berkshire is in from, you know, their main business is Geico, right? And if tariffs are going up, the input costs to fix cars, fix homes, whatever they're insuring goes up. And this is the case for all property and casualty insurers. And so I think that's one of the headwinds. Earnings this year are supposed to fall 8%, but then bounce back 6% next year, but still lower than where we were last year at $22 per share. This is Berkshire B, by the way, Berkshire B shares. So you're not seeing great earnings trends, definitely some near-term headwinds with the tariffs, the economy slowing a bit. They own railroads, Burlington Northern, so less goods potentially being shipped due to tariffs. So there's just a lot here that, at least in the shorter term, I'm not optimistic that this recent downtrend that started when this peaked out in late April, I'm not convinced that this is the bottom. I'm not convinced that I want to step in size at these levels. I still think there could be more pain ahead. Now, long term, they do have great assets, fairly diversified. But I do also worry, like I said before, about that key man risk with Warren stepping down. And the new leadership, as I've said before in the show, hasn't shown to have the same discipline and investment chops as Warren, which is frankly a tall task, right? So not to say that they can't be solid, they can't be good, but you know, I think that this is an area that you want to be careful with. So I'd continue to watch it. It's not at a level that's screaming buy at this point. So I would be patient on Berkshire.
All right. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you for the call. That was Thomas in Santa Cruz looking at Berkshire Beet. Now we're moving into a break, still to come, my focus point, more answers to your questions and a YouTube question as well. And yes, I will get today's market wrap also. Call me right now at 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Wanted to get your take on W.W. Grainger.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
The issue, though, is really over the last decade or so, it's never maintained this level of profitability for a long period of time.
Commodities are incredibly volatile, so when the going is good, take some profit.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
My name is Mike. I'm calling in from Orange County, California.
And this is Lewis calling from Bolivia.
Let's go talk to Chris in Maine.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
First off, great show. I learned a lot from you too.
888-99-CHART. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
And we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and time permitting, we'll get to all of it. Our main focus point is Coast Fire. I like this topic. There's been a recent trend called FIRE, Financial Independence Retire Early, and this is a twist on FIRE, and I really like it because it, I think, is a bit more realistic, and both in the short term as well as the long term. So I actually really like this strategy for a lot of people. So we'll dig into that. In addition, we'll touch on the dollar and what we call purchasing power parity. Also, there's a measure of purchasing power parity called the Big Mac Index, put out by The Economist, and it tells you whether the dollar is over or undervalued. And now that the dollar index has fallen about 10% since the beginning of the year, where does that leave the Big Mac Index? So we'll dig into that. Also, everyone's focusing on tariffs and their economic impact. But there's a Trump policy that is far more impactful on the broader economy than tariffs, because tariffs are on goods, and goods are a very small percentage of our economy. The majority of our economy, about 70%+, are services. And immigration policy has a much stronger direct impact on services than it does on the rest of the economy. So we'll dig into what impact that could have, both on economic growth as well as probably inflation. Okay, so we'll dig into that. In addition, we also have, if we have time, the diamond industry. It's transformed dramatically over the last decade, and we'll talk about why that is. And then we have voice bank calls. One is on Palo Alto Networks, and the other is on how to add a trailing stop. And we also have questions that came in via the InvestTalk YouTube channel as well. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment question right now at 888-99-CHART. Now let's go look at the market today. It was another positive day. Let me pull this up here. If my computer wants to go along with me here. So yeah, it was a positive day. High open day. There we go. S&P was up 0.5%, a little over 0.5%. Same with the Dow. and the NASDAQ about 0.75%. But small caps did very well today. Small cap growth up 1.29%, and small cap blend up about 1.25%. So you had small caps up over 1% on average today, while the rest of the market, like I said, up about 0.5% or so. You had some pockets of weakness in the healthcare space, as well as some pockets of strength in tech. Financials did fairly well. You had Bank of America up over 2%. So pretty solid day on that front. Now, when it comes to the rest of the market, you had, or the rest of the rest of the asset classes, shall we say. Where is it? I'm pulling it up. My system doesn't want to tell me. I guess we're going to go to a break. We don't have time. Wish I could give you more. We're heading to a break. Give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right. You'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com. And now Justin Klein is here and taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Now, before the break, I was going over the market, and I kind of want to finish that because you did have some decent movements in other asset classes. Dollar was up 0.2%. Treasuries were weaker, which means rates were a bit higher. 30-year hovering just above 5%, so recapturing that 5% level. Bitcoin was down 0.1%. Gold finished up 0.4%. WTI was up 1.6%, so oil did fairly well. On the economic front, June retail sales was a bit better than expected, 0.6% month over month. Consensus was 0.2, so actually a pretty big beat there. If you X out autos, though, it was more of a modest beat, 0.5% month over month versus expectations of 0.4. May was revised slightly higher as well there, but only by 0.1%. So pretty interesting strength out of the retail sales. Strength was in car and auto parts, clothing stores, building materials, restaurants and bars continued to be strong, general merchandise. Weakness was really in electronics and appliances, furniture and home stores, things that have tariffs involved, prices going higher. So that's one issue. The labor market report Thursday, every Thursday you get the continuing and initial claims. And once again, you had a initial claims that actually beat. It's like about a month now where initial claims continue to decline from closer to 250,000 per week, which it peaked out at last month. And now we're down to 221. Consensus was 232. But continuing claims, that continues to stay steady around the 1.95 million people on the unemployment doles. Now, consensus was 1.97, so it did beat a little bit, but still kind of in that uptrend. Philly Fed manufacturing for July was very strong, 15.9, up from negative 4 in June. So certainly some strength there. So overall, actually a fairly decent day for economic numbers. So that was the market today, and tomorrow is OPEX. Let's take a live call from Larry in Minnesota looking at Akamai.
Hey, Justin.
Hey.
Yeah, I was looking at this name. They're a cloud platform provider. It seems like they help companies deliver content securely, kind of serving as an infrastructure as a service. You know, they work with some of the largest companies, and they have a good diversified revenue base, both geographically and, you know, across their customers. It seems, you know, like they have high recurring revenue, strong free cash flow, strong buybacks. They've, you know, bought back about 22% of their float over 10 years. So just curious what your opinion is on this company and what risks am I maybe not seeing here?
Well, I like the recurring revenue part. This is a name we've owned a long time ago for clients. Yeah, I think the biggest issue is the profitability. Return equity is only about 9%, and that's declining from the mid-teens back in 2021. So that's an issue. And then the growth, right? Where growth in the broader business is just not really there. Revenue last quarter was up 3%. Earnings this year is supposed to be down 3%. Okay. And that's with buying back shares. And you see the net income peaked out around $628 million. That was in the second quarter of last year. Now we're down to $452 million. Okay, so net income is falling. If you look at operating margins right now, they're at 15%, but that's way down from a high around 23% in 2022. And even go back to 2015, they were up to 22%. So they've been in a long kind of downtrend in their profitability. They do have a good balance sheet, pretty minimal debt. And I like the way they're taking their cash flow, which is healthy, and putting that into share buybacks. But oftentimes that can mask the underlying issues with the business. And I just don't see a lot of growth. I see more erosion of their business over the longer term. I see the merits, but I just would rather own something that has some organic growth, not just manufactured growth through stock buybacks. I don't think it's terrible. It's not like I would blast anybody for owning it, that it's the worst thing in the world or anything like that. It's just, I don't see it as particularly compelling because of that lack of growth and low profitability that continues to go down. So, and then you look at the chart, right? Its momentum is not very good. So I just would continue to watch it until they can return to growth, start expanding their margins. You know, I worry that this is a value trap. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
No problem. Now, the next Invest Talk, we will look into this story. Three biggest misconceptions about dividend stocks. Many investors believe dividend stocks are always safe and reliable, but there are key misconceptions that can lead to poor investment choices if not carefully examined. That story for tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls right now at 888-99-CHART. No matter what our day looks like, I think we can agree that we all need nourishment that fuels us, right? So let me tell you about Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes. I'm really liking them. And bonus surprise, the Kachava Shakes come in five delicious flavors. Chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, coconut acai. Variety is a good thing. And it's easy to incorporate Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes into my daily routine. I like to personalize my Kachava by adding nice touches like frozen blueberries, almond milk, creatine. For me, the idea is to mix it up while keeping my body and mind nourished all day. In fact, Kachava is a whole body meal with plant-based protein that actually tastes delicious. In those five indulgent flavors I mentioned, you get 25 grams of 100% plant-based protein with every two scoops of Kachava. You get 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Kachava is non-GMO. There are no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. There's no soy, no animal products, no gluten, and no preservatives. You can even try Kachava risk-free with their Love It guarantee. Fuel your day with Kachava. Go to kachava.com and use code INVEST for 15% off on their subscription for a limited time. That's Kachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A. .com code invest for 15% off.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today is about Coast Fire. Coast Fire, and this is a wrinkle on the very popular FIRE concept, which is financial independence, retire early. And Coast Fire is a bit different, and frankly, I think it's far more achievable for most people. Now, Coast Fire is where you make life choices that save a large amount of money so you can retire before your 60s. But you do it in a way where you don't just quit working. You scale back your hours. You scale back. Maybe you change careers into something that's less lucrative, or something you want to do, something that's more flexible, or just simply less hours. Whatever that means to you. Okay. So you still minimize your spending, you invest as much as possible, very similar to FIRE, and you reach your target of savings that lets you coast towards an eventual retirement in your 60s. So instead of, hey, I'm going to limit my spending, invest a ton in my 20s and 30s and maybe in my 40s, and then at maybe 50, I retire and I'm done working. And that's the FIRE concept, right? Retire early. Early can mean a lot of different things. But Coast FIRE is basically saying, I'm going to have some similar concepts in my life financially to limit spending and save a lot. But I'm not going to, my goal isn't to stop working. It's to do something a bit different or scale back at hours, like I said. Now, why this is more achievable? Well, because when your goal is just to cover your day-to-day expenses, which is kind of the Coast Fire goal, which is, okay, at what point can I scale back? I no longer need to save more, for example, right? I don't need to save. I might save 30, 40% of my income up until I hit my goal, and then I'm just covering my expenses, and the rest is just going to grow. Right, so you might save a ton, and then at 40 or 45, you might say, I'm going to go from full-time to part-time, but I have enough money to where if I invest it over the next decade or two, when I hit 60 or 65, I can combine that with Social Security or some other pension that I might be qualified for, and I will have enough money to really retire. But there's this area where I'm coasting, this 15 to 20, maybe 25 years where I'm not working that hard anymore. I did that. I saved a ton. I sacrificed. Now, you know, I'm working a part-time job. Maybe I'm a barista at Starbucks or whatever, doing something that you want to do more than what you're doing now. And that's really the Coast Fire concept. And that's why I like it. You know, another reason why it can be helpful too is, and more realistic, is that period where you work part-time, you can still get health insurance at certain jobs. You might even still have some sort of 401k. You can get an employer match on, etc. And you still are in contact with society. I think that's the biggest aspect the FIRE people miss, is that when you retire, you don't have that constant, almost forced interaction with the rest of the world. And that, in many ways, can be unhealthy, both physically and mentally. And so this concept, which means that your target will be lower than the standard FIRE, right, of how much you need to save. This is something that keeps you busy during those coast years and allows you to expand, have more time to expand on those relationships, right? Explore those relationships, do things with the people that you interact with and friends you make and the family that you have as well. Now, what is that bridge to the future? You know, that's really what this is trying to figure out. Okay, what is that dollar amount I need? And where are the events that I need to get to in order to bridge myself to that ultimate retirement. And the first might be just that savings target, like I said, but it also might be a pension that you're eligible for. It also might be kids leaving the house, right? I need to work, save, carry this, I don't want to say burden, but carry this other person, human being on my payroll, get them off, and then I can use that money, save a little bit more, and get to that point where I can just coast. I can scale back my working hours and make less money, and that's fine because I have saved enough. And it might also be when you pay off that mortgage, right? You put extra towards your mortgage. A lot of people right now, we have clients that are doing this, putting it in treasuries. Their mortgage rate's at 2%, and they're putting money towards this treasury account, earning 4%, earning a gap between their interest accrual on their mortgage and their cash. And then once cash goes down, cash yields go down below that mortgage rate, then they take that cash and they pay it off. A lot of people are doing that as well. So these are goals that you can put in place to hit in order to hit that coast portion of the coast fire, which this is something if you want need a financial advisor, it might be helpful to lay this all out. This is what we do for clients beyond just the investment side and getting that dialed in. It's about getting the financial plan dialed in. And we have clients that pretty much are on the path for coast fire. And I think it's a great concept that a lot of people should follow. Now let's keep things moving and play a fresh caller question now at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Brett Shred from California. I called in before. You guys are excellent on setting me straight on some of these stocks. But I really want to get into cybersecurity, and I was in CrowdStrike, but CrowdStrike seems so high, so I started really investing in Palo Alto, PANW. What is your feedback on that stock? Do you feel like I'm thinking more 5 year to hold this stock, but it grows pretty slow, very conservative. Just want to know if it's something that I should keep going with or you recommend something else. Thank you.
All right, looking at Palo Alto Networks. And as you imagine, it is out of Santa Clara, out of Palo Alto, or out of Silicon Valley. And it is in the cybersecurity space. Earnings growth continues to be strong. Now, it's slowed a bit. It's supposed to be 15% this year from 28% last year and 76% the year before. And earnings are supposed to go up 12% next year. So that is probably my biggest worry, is that this is trading at very high multiples. Price to sales at 15 times. And while that's it's a great business, 21% return on equity, pristine balance sheet, good cash flow, about $3 billion trailing 12 months. But its enterprise value is $125 billion. So it's about a 2.5% free cash flow yield. And free cash flow has gone sideways, really, over the past 2 years. It's just hanging out around $3 billion. Once again, good business. But it's just too expensive. Enterprise value to EBITDA is 75. And to me, I would just be very patient within this space. I agree that you want to have cybersecurity in your portfolio at some point over the long term. The problem is that they keep issuing shares as well. So that's stock-based compensation. So not really accounting for that in free cash flow. That worries me. So they're issuing more shares at sky-high valuations. And I understand why it's on your watch list, but it needs to be much, much cheaper. So I'm passing on Palo Alto Networks. And then if I look on a daily chart, just in the short term, it did have a pretty nice reversal a few days ago. It looks like it's topping here. And so I would pass on it. Now, every day we receive questions from the comment section over on the InvestTalk YouTube channel, and let's answer one of those questions now. Nicholas Collins says, hey, hope you're doing well. I have a question about Newmont mining. It's about 6% of my portfolio. With the recent gains, I'm wondering when is a good time to trim or at all. Well, I think the broader question is how much exposure do you have to precious metals? Now, 6%, you're kind of in the upper limits of what I'd want for one ownership in one particular company. However, if this is all only your only gold miner, then I would probably hold it. So I think Newmont is undervalued. I have no problems with you holding it. They have a little bit of pullback recently. They had I think the CFO stepped down, but earnings supposed to be $5 next year. So about 11, 12 times forward looking earnings. Obviously, gold prices continue to go higher. They're very well diversified in their mines throughout the world. $64 billion market cap. Decent dividend, 1.7% there. Last quarter, revenues up 25%. Earnings up 127%. So I like Newmont. Is it a decent time to trim after this run? Sure. Maybe rebalance it back to 3 or 4%. But once again, it's about the total allocation of gold and silver. If you have less than 15%, then I probably wouldn't trim it at all. I would probably keep this as part of your exposure to the gold and mining space. Thanks for the call. Now let's squeeze in another caller question now.
Hi, InvestTalk. I was hoping you guys could walk me through how to add a trailing stop. I use Schwab as my my brokerage. You know, I see online about like what percentage to do a trailing stop at, but I don't see exactly how to like actually execute it. So if I want to sell it like 5% lower, could I just do like a limit order that's good till close and, you know, submit that? I guess another worry I have is that, you know, someone on the other side could, I guess, theoretically, you know, also have a buying price, you know, 5% lower, and that order would be executed and even before the price got to that level, just because there's another order on the, I guess, opposite side of the trade, if that makes sense. I guess I just want to make sure I do it the right way where I'm not, you know, missing out on a potential gain, you know, just due to a poor order being submitted, if that makes sense, as opposed to it actually coming down in price, which, you know, I'd be okay with. But yeah, I'll listen on the show, and thanks as always. Bye.
All right, well, we custody our accounts at Schwab as well. Now, we typically don't trade directly on the Schwab platform, believe it or not. We actually trade through a couple of pieces of software. One we pay for separately called Orion that our clients log in through. And the other is actually a piece of software that came over from TD Ameritrade. It's called ThinkPipes, kind of an offshoot, very similar to Thinkorswim. So we trade mainly on there. But I do know on Schwab, and I actually have it pulled up here, is that you can put a trailing stop limit or a trailing stop on an order. I know this is on the institutional side. I haven't seen it on the retail side, so I'm not sure. But you should be able to set a trailing stop. However, if you can't do it online, call them. There's a trading desk, and they'll help you with how to place that order. Now, when it comes to, will someone see that? Will they get picked off? It could, right? There are market makers that see those orders, and you could certainly get picked off there. I personally would not try to, I don't like using these orders and placing them. I rather manually calculate that, right? What that trailing stop is, you know, keep a notebook on your positions of, you know, what if it drops below X, and you can do alerts, I believe. I know there's a lot of pieces of software. We have software, we can do alerts. If something drops below a certain price, it will alert us. So you might want to find some software to try to do something like that. That's the way I would execute a trailing stop. And for everyone else out there, what a trailing stop is when a stock is rallying, that if it drops below a certain percentage, then you would sell it. So that's a trailing stop order. Now, lastly, let's talk, or not lastly, before the break, let's touch a bit on the Big Mac Index. And we know tariffs have gone up on average this year. The effective tariff rate has gone from 2.5% last year to 17% this year. And the dollar has declined significantly. But The Economist has a Big Mac Index. And the reason they do this is because Big Macs are fairly consistent throughout the world. And based on what price they trade for, you can really see which currencies are over or undervalued. So this is, in economic terms, you call this purchasing power parity. And if all things being equal, doesn't matter which country you're in, a Big Mac should cost the same. In reality, though, that's not true. And based on this, you can see which currencies are over or undervalued. So currencies that are undervalued, the Taiwan rupee, you have the Indian rupee, the Taiwanese dollar, there we go, Taiwanese dollar, Indian rupee, and the Indonesian rupee as well. Those are the three most undervalued. The most overvalued is actually the Swiss franc. And the euro is now a bit overvalued, and the pound is a bit overvalued as well. But most other currencies are undervalued, which means they should appreciate, which means the dollar should continue down over time, especially with this new tariff regime. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, is to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART. And don't forget to head over to the new InvestTalk store. It's open now at InvestTalkStore.com.
'25 rolls on, and you've got finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question before we close today. But before we close, let's also answer an InvestTalk YouTube question. And Amir Ramik says, question on HPE or CARR, so what do you think they are, sort of storage cooling systems for chips? Very interesting. Love to know what you think. Well, HPE, these are very different companies. So HPE is Hewlett Packard Enterprises. They're just, they just had approval of Juniper Networks. So they're merging with Juniper. And the market's kind of like that. The market's up after the DOJ, looks like they approved that merger. And so they're a IT vendor. Solid business, but frankly, not an amazing business. Return equity is only 6%. That's not great. And even the good times, return equity did get hit 20% back in 2022. That was kind of an anomaly. Typically, return equity hovers around the high single digits. Once again, not a bad business, but not an amazing business either. Earnings this year, for example, are supposed to fall 6% after falling 8% last year. So not great. The other one, Carrier, C-A-R-R is a symbol, is in the heating, ventilation and air conditioning and refrigeration business, which is historically a much better business. If you look at its profitability, 41% return equity, return invested capital, 21%. Now you're getting a better, you're paying a higher premium than you would for HPE, but you're getting a much better business. So if I'm picking one or the other, I'm going to go with CARR, Carrier Global. Thanks for the call. Let's go take a live call. Bill in Northern California looking at NVO, Norvo Nordisk.
Hey, Justin.
Hey.
Yeah. I just noticed, lately that this has kind of, come up from a lower point here. I don't know if that's bottoming, but I like the company, and I just wonder how you see it as terms of valuation and maybe as an entry point for a longer-term hold.
This is interesting because we were reassessing the healthcare industry and kind of relooking at all the players in the space. And this was in our top five, shall we say. But we ended up not going with it for a few reasons. One is the momentum is poor. So until the chart starts to look a bit better, I think it's the market telling you something. Because if you look at earnings expectations for next year, they are pretty solid. So supposed to go up again. Their cash flow is good. But then if you look at things like their market share in the GLP-1 therapy area, and their market share is falling to Eli Lilly. They're looking to, they have a new obesity drug called CagriSema, which is a late stage GLP-1, and the results were not that great. Their legacy business is around insulin, and insulin pricing continues to be pressured. In fact, they announced they will cut U.S. list prices on several insulin products by more than 70% starting January of next year. And that was basically in line with Eli Lilly. And this is all about regulatory and legislative pressures.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Well, thanks for the insight. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And the Inflation Reduction Act mandated price negotiations for certain drugs under Medicare, capping monthly insulin costs at $35 for Medicare recipients. That's a big part of their business. So while the whole GLP-1 craze, they were pumped up for that, and I think it's come back down to earth to at least more reasonable valuations, I think there's too many other issues here that bring a lot of risks to future earnings. And so for us, it looks good on the surface, but when you dig, there's too much lack of clarity for us to buy, and you have to listen to the chart, and the chart is headed lower. So it's a name we're going to continue to watch, but not buying it right now.
Thanks.
I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program, and if today's show made you think about your own financial picture in any way, whether it's your investment allocation, your financial planning, maybe coast fire or fire in general, right? Financial independence, retire early. That's what, you know, we're hoping for all of you. And that's what we work towards with our clients. And so if you need help with any of that, I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com and schedule a free portfolio review. Help bring clarity and confidence to whatever strategy you are trying to execute. So we thank you for listening to our podcast and radio show. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about a free podcast download, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. It's InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights.